Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Another victory by Yemen's military and Ansar of fighters have taken place inside of Saudi Arabia. Now, this one seems to be even bigger than their attack on Aramco 2 weeks ago. Let's take a listen.
The launch of the military operation Victory from God in the Najran Axis, which is considered the largest campaign against the enemy's forces since the beginning of the aggression against our country. It has been ongoing for a few months, and the enemy has incurred huge losses in life and machinery. Firstly, the fall of three complete military brigades from the enemy with all their machinery and most of their soldiers and commanders. Secondly, seizing a large number of weapons, including hundreds of machines and military vehicles. Thirdly, the fall of thousands of the enemy's forces as prisoners, most of them from the traitors and the Khand, and the death and injury of hundreds more. Fourthly, among the prisoners, there's a large number of commanders and soldiers from the Saudi army. Fifth, after only 70 hours from the beginning of the operation, our forces had completely surrounded the enemy, which consisted of three military brigades of traitors and those that have been conned, and one whole faction from the Saudi military.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program as we talk about this operation and look at it from a strategic perspective. Brian Downing, journalist and political commentator out of Fort Myers, Florida, and Scott Ricord, former American intelligence linguist out of St. Petersburg, Florida. Thank you both for being with me out of Florida. Well, let's start this off with Brian. Let's talk about the overall strategic significance of Saudi Arabia being this vulnerable, despite spending hundreds of billions of dollars on American and British equipment and having Washington's support in every way. I mean, this has happened just 2 weeks after the operation or the attack on Aramco.
Well, the Saudi military is pretty much a fraud. A house of cards. It spends a lot of money, but it is not a very competent military at all. It was judged militarily incompetent during the first Gulf War back in the 90s. We saw how some drones and cruise missiles hit the Aramco sites pretty hard, and I am not getting any substantial evidence that the Saudis shot down many, if any, of them. The Saudi military is filled with cronies. You don't get to be a colonel or a general by passing professional tests and showing your medal. You get it by being related to someone in the royal family or a friend thereof. Furthermore, there are a lot of tribal factions within the Saudi military. They don't work side by side together very well. They don't trust one another, and that's going to hurt unit combat efficacy. And I think we're seeing it in southwestern Arabia right now.
Well, Scott, I mean, speaking about, for example, officers in the Saudi military, we have reports that three brigades have been captured, and also these officers, high-ranking officers also have been captured. Let's talk about the significance of that. We're talking about Yemen. We're talking about the poorest country in the region. We're talking about a country that has had a siege on it by Saudi Arabia with the support of the United States and others. And the significance of Yemeni forces and Ansar Allah being able to carry out such an attack.
Well, it doesn't come as a surprise, actually, when you look at the region and the control of that region, given the individuals from Najran, as well as the Houthis from the mountain, most of them the leaders and the strategic strategy behind Ansar Allah. These are individuals who obviously have worked together over the centuries, as well as, let's be clear here, Najran has really only been a part of Saudi Arabia since the 1930s. And this was always an independent region. And many of the quote-unquote brigade members there were absolutely conscripts. These are individuals who are forced into it because of economic reasons and certainly because of the control of the kingdom of the region. when it comes to the officers that have to be stationed in this outskirts of Saudi Arabia. Let's be clear here as well. These are not the most elite of the Saudi Arabian officers. These are the officers who get the worst assignments. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, the Saudi military, these aren't individuals who are excited about belonging to a military force in which they absolutely do not believe in. So when it comes to the Saudi military, very much like many militaries that require conscripts, especially those in which are pulled in from regions that have been conquered and are controlled, these are also Shiite, many Shiite in the southwest of Saudi Arabia, when in fact the Saudi Arabians are beheading many of the Shiite leaders across the country. So these are, unfortunately, soldiers that are put in a bad position. Hopefully they'll be treated well by their Houthi captors and the Ansar Allah forces. Absolutely, these are forces that were not going to be aggressive in their nature at trying to help the Saudis. And the fact that there are this many, three brigades, I mean, that can be as many as 3,000 to 7,000 soldiers that were involved. And if it was over a four-month period, obviously it was not a very difficult crew to gather up. These individuals are not going to be very aggressive in their nature on the ground. Unfortunately, the aggressive nature comes from the air, from the Saudi Arabians, and the weapons in which the Americans and the British have provided the Saudi Arabians to relentlessly bomb and obviously put in tremendous amounts of blockades that have starved out the entire nation of 25-plus million people.
Well, Brian, has the pendulum swung in the other direction this after more than 4 years of Saudi pounding on the Yemeni people at will, basically? Now, Yemeni forces seem to be able to initiate and succeed at striking Saudi forces and their mercenaries. Your take on this side of things?
Well, it is a serious blow to the Saudis, but another one is going on in the south, where a separatist group, part of the Sunni forces in the south, this one backed by the United Arab Emirates, is opposing continuing the war, and they are arguing for a partition of Yemen along lines of sectarian and regional lines, the Shia north and the Sunni south. The Saudis don't want that, I think in part, at least now, as of now, they don't want it. In part because I think Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, is eager to win something. He lost in Syria. He has tremendous, and I would say worrisome, ambitions about gaining power throughout the Arabian Peninsula and beyond. So the Emirates are trying for partition in the south, and I think that is something the United States and other powers, and perhaps Qatar and Oman, Gulf states that really don't want the big shots going to war in the region, should support. And that, as I said, is where the United States should be, with partition. The North and the South have fought three civil wars so far in the last 50, 60 years. Mm-hmm. They just don't get along. It's time to really just negotiate a settlement between North and South.
Well, Scott, after this latest operation, do you think that this may prove to those who doubt it the ability of the Yemeni forces, of their capabilities and success? We saw what happened after their successful attack on Aramco. Basically, those inside of the Saudi regime and also their American supporters saying that the Yemenis just could not have pulled that off.
Well, obviously, everyone's underestimated the Houthi forces as well as Ansar Allah. These forces have shown incredible vigilance. Obviously, they're very well equipped in their mountainous area. They know this region very well. They've been fighting out of this region for hundreds of years. At the same time, you know, when you talk about the puppet government behind Hadi in the South, and you talk about the West and really the revolution against the South and the North and the South. You really have a group that has constantly looked for their independence, and you know in a short period of hopefulness. You actually saw a prisoner exchange this week of 13 prisoners on each side exchanged between the North and the South, which is a good sign. I too believe that there could be a good separation there. Unfortunately, a lot of the wealth is in the South with the oil industry, so the North would suffer in an economic position.
Okay, well, Brian, let's look at the U.S. and the U.K., and of course their endless support that they have given the Saudi regime in this war against the Yemeni people. Of course, going into this onslaught, I will say, the Saudi regime did not take more than a few weeks or months at max, and now we're seeing 4.5 years later, still very much entangled in that situation. I want to look at London and Washington. Do you think that they will continue to support this failure by Saudi Arabia? And if not, what do you think is going to happen with this?
Well, you're asking me to predict what Donald Trump is going to do. Sorry, I'm not that peg grade yet. I think there will be tremendous pressure on him to intervene, but not as much as you might think. I think the American generals really don't want another war in the Middle East. They're bogged down in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. They have advisors here and there throughout the region. I don't think they want it. Is there a really smart foreign policy team in there, in the White House, around the White House, that's going to present a realist position? Probably not. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is a pretty hardliner vis-a-vis Iran. But, you know, even he has started to sound like there should be some negotiations between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Pressure from Israel, well, we don't really know, because Netanyahu might be out the door pretty soon. And in his place would be former Army Chief of Staff Benny Gantz, who might have a more realistic approach to things that he might know, as many realist analysts such as myself realize, that at one point Israel and Iran sort of had a mutual view that the Saudis, the Sunnis, especially the Saudis, were kind of a dangerous, and they needed to team up against the Saudis. We're not moving in that direction real
soon.
Don't you
see Israel is basically now having an alliance with the Saudis? I mean, if we look at this, the terrorists in the region, whether we're talking about al-Nusra Front or Daesh, and we have seen the Israelis actually treating the terrorists. So isn't that obvious that now the Saudi regime and the regime in Tel Aviv are working hand in hand together in many situations?
Yeah, but Netanyahu might not be the prime minister in a few weeks. He's struggling to form a government right now, but the odds slightly favor his opponent, Benny Gantz, the former Army Chief of Staff, who I suspect has a more realistic approach to policies in the region.
Well, Scott, your take. I mean, what does the U.S., I won't even bring in the U.K. right now since I'm talking to you sitting inside of the United States. Let's talk about Washington. What does the United States get out of supporting Saudi Arabia, especially in this onslaught against the Yemeni people? And with more than 4.5 years of failure, why does Washington continue to support this fiasco?
Well, I tend to completely disagree with Mr. Downing's analysis here. The United States will not change, and nor will Israel change its posture with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's extremely lucrative from a financial perspective. Saudi Arabia is the number one importer of not only the United States military-industrial complex, but absolutely United Kingdom as well. At the same time, they're very close. Let's be very clear here. The name of the facility that was hit was Aramco, I have friends in Texas who work for Aramco. It was started by Texas oilmen and British oilmen, as well as obviously Saudi territory. This is a long-standing, over a century relationship. There'll be absolutely no change. It's not dependent on Donald Trump's decisions. You know, it's the same bus and a different driver when a different administration shows up.
So, Scott, you're saying it's all about the money at the end of the day.
In Israel.
You're saying it's all about the money.
All about the money, all about the military-industrial complex, all about the financial infrastructure, all about the educational industry. MIT is heavily funded by Saudi Arabia, and vice versa. MIT cooperates very heavily in the education system in Saudi Arabia, in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. This is a long-standing, tremendous relationship. There'll be absolutely no change depending on who comes into either administration, no matter who wins. The same situation will arise.
Well, looking at Scott's analysis, Brian, your take then, if that is, for the sake of argument, we'll go with Scott's analysis right now, that it will not change. So doesn't that point more and more in the direction that those who need to fight against such system, I mean, it's only through resistance that they can ever be successful. Otherwise, the Saudis are definitely not going to negotiate. We know the U.S. won't negotiate. And basically, they're just looking after their only interests. So when we see what is happening in Yemen by Yemeni forces and Saudi-led fighters, isn't that a model basically for the region, that this region, when dealing with U.S. interests, those who have been successful, it's only through resistance?
Well, I wasn't suggesting that the United States was going to break with Saudi Arabia. I only suggested that it might be reluctant to get involved deeper in this Yemeni conflict. I think the Saudis are probably urging the United States to intervene with heavy air power, perhaps even a few thousand ground troops. They would argue that, well, this would be a short, temporary thing. Well, I don't think the generals believe that. And I don't think they're going to be very reluctant. I think they will be very reluctant to get further involved in Yemen. But I think the Houthis have put up a substantial resistance. You know, the underlying thing in this war is the rise of Saudi Wahhabism inside Yemen. That is what led to the Houthi movement. That is what led to this civil war. Now, I can't imagine what Americans would think if about 30% of the American public suddenly became very loyal to Mohammed bin Salman and Saudi Wahhabism. Well, that's what's going on inside Yemen, and I think the American public, perhaps the American political candidates on the Democratic side, would make note of this and argue against any further deepening of our involvement.
Well, Scott, your take, I mean, what Brian said is that the American public and also especially politicians should take a certain stance. But again, if you're talking about the industrial military complex and you're talking about the money and other type of, if you want to call it, benefits that the United States get for such a move, and we know how the American system works, it's obviously not likely that these politicians who want to be president, for example, are going to go against what many would say is their financial interests. So I will go back to the question I posed, Brian, that doesn't this prove, at least for this region and perhaps others, that basically it is only through resistance that any of these countries or entities or groups are going to be able to fight against these hegemonic powers and their supporters? I mean, we can look at what is happening with Iran. We can look at Hezbollah. We can look at certain Palestinian entities now, and we look at Ansarullah. And we see that it has been, at the end of the day, resistance that has given them success. Your take?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, ask any Libyan, ask any Syrian, ask any Iraqi, ask any, ask any of the individuals involved in any of the wars that the Americans have fought in that region. Obviously, the only thing you can do is resist a superpower. This is, you know, the fact that the Americans are not supportive of the Saudis is a joke. This is like the most intelligence being supplied out of CENTCOM is for Saudi Arabia here out of Florida. Absolutely, they have already shipped a brigade of additional forces to Saudi Arabia in the last 2 weeks. This is no joke. The Americans are heavily embedded from an intelligence, logistics, manufacturing. They're manufacturing weapons today here in Florida, getting ready to ship them over to Saudi Arabia. It's a tremendous amount of support. The logistics side of war is more than 60 to 70% of the war. If you don't have the weapons, you can't go to war. So the fact remains here is the United States is incredibly supportive and incredibly involved in the war in Yemen. So that, you know, at the same time as well, only small resistance. That's the only thing that they'll have. The fact that the Yemen military or the Yemen rebels were able to fire off weaponry and hit Aramco's facility is fantastic. It's unbelievable that you have a small resistance force that can hit a target like this. In fact, that would be the best kind of targets to go after. If you do not hit these types of superpowers in the pocketbook, they will never stop. That is the only thing they understand. And once it becomes a financial drain and it hurts their economy, that is when they will negotiate.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on another debate right here at Press TV. Brian Downing, journalist and political commentator out of Fort Myers, Florida, and Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist out of St. Pete, Florida. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.